everybody. Welcome to the Friday Filibuster, coming at you from two-thirds of us are coming from New England, actually. We have a lineup of myself, Judge David Johnson, Judge Mike Rubino, who is vacationing in Smuggler's Notch.
Hello.
And Dan Mancini, who is not vacationing, presumably.
No, definitely not vacationing.
Definitely not vacationing. So only one of us will sound relaxed and just kind of laid back, and that'd be Mike Rubino, who's just enjoying. What are you enjoying right now in Vermont? We'll start with you, Mike. What are you enjoying?
Okay.
What does the Green Mountain State have to offer to the Rubinos?
Well, yeah, we're up here, and you caught me at a good time because it is currently storming up here in the mountains of Vermont, and I'm stuck in my hotel here on Smuggler's Notch, which now, is.
Have you solved any mysteries up there? Because it certainly sounds like the setting.
It does, and it is the season for Smuggler's Notch, and for, I guess, this whole Vermont area starts tomorrow, Friday. So it is dead up here, literally. And it feels like we're, my family is here, like, in The Shining, and we're just taking care of Smuggler's Notch while everybody's away. Everything's closed.
Nice. Are you working on your novel?
Yes. There has been no play. It's been all work. But it is
all
weird.
Work and no play. Yeah.
That's right. This is a the only reason I have heard of this place prior to this, I will say, is because it was the grand prize for almost every episode of Legends of the Hidden Temple. The
yes,
the early
That's right,
90s.
The impossible game show for kids.
That's right. The grand prize, more often than not, if you got out of the temple with whatever artifact you were searching and
That's
you were
right.
not nabbed by a temple guard, was a all expenses paid trip to Smuggler's Notch. So
little fun fact. Yeah, little fun. I'm glad you mentioned that because we don't talk nearly enough about Legends of the Hidden Temple. For a while, there was the Nick Game Show Network was on our cable provider. My wife and I were addicted to Legends of the Hidden Temple. We just
Absolutely.
Had this morbid fascination with it just because it had the most impossible final obstacle run. It was like always stacked against the kid.
It absolutely was. No kid could put together that monkey.
That's right, the monkey. And worse, like the temple guards, it was fixed because, kids got eliminated when they couldn't give the temple guards whatever.
The dependent of life.
Yes, the dependent of life. So, it was impossible for the kids to do anything.
Yeah, I grew up with that show. I used to play that show in my kitchen. and then when it was on gas, I used to watch. I would be up all hours of the night watching all of those game shows. So I'm well versed in the Nickelodeon games, and that is it's impossible.
It is.
It is impossible.
Confusing. It was very confusing. There wasn't
multiple
like a nice linear layout at all. It was a very confusing layout. The prizes kind of sucked. Like if you didn't get the Smuggler's Notch prize, you got rollerblades and like ring pops. I remember they gave out.
Yeah, you would get ring pops. Sometimes you would get some Ratch Tech or BK Knight shoes.
Yeah, those are great. some terrible Nintendo game. The Ren and Stimpy game or something terrible. Now here's a little Legend of the Hidden Temple trivia. What is the name of the host?
Oh, that's Kirk Fogg.
Kirk Fogg. So he actually appeared several times, and we were excited to see. He's in Arrested Development.
He is?
The cameo in Arrested Development as one of the as an FBI agent during the whole Mole Man. when Tobias was the Mole Man, he is one of the FBI agents.
Oh, I don't think I've realized that because I know he's done some like straight to DVD suspense movies that he's directed, written, and starred in.
Yeah, I knew he was a filmmaker. But yeah, he'll show up. So we get when we see Kirk Fogg, we get pretty excited. And what was the name of the stone man.
That'd be Olmec.
Olmec, yes.
Yes. So, yeah.
That was one of the challenges, like the kids had to sacrifice a virgin to Olmec or something.
I actually have a friend of mine for Christmas one year got me a Legends of the Hidden Temple team t-shirt. I have the Silver Snakes t-shirt.
That's awesome.
And I forgot to pack it because I wanted to pretend to be a winner who just now got here after 10 years. Trying to redeem this vacation.
That is the makings for something. Like
I know.
Like a short film or
We've
something.
Been meaning to ask some of the employees if they remember kids coming up here from that show, but we haven't seen anybody because it's been so empty. So
you're one of those, yeah.
Yeah.
Legends kids.
Yes, a whole generation of children who now have their own kids.
That's right. How's the scenery?
It is beautiful up here. Really beautiful. Vermont is a great state. You know, we've visited Ben and Jerry's. We visited Magic Hat Brewery. We've gone to Montreal one day. So it's been a good time.
All places, I'd like to add, that the old white men cabal are not welcome, right, Dan? No.
Yes. Yeah. They are absolutely not welcome in Vermont. Bob Newhart is, but
Bob
no.
Newhart is.
Not the old
yeah, I tried to find. Yeah, I tried to find Bob Newhart. Or, wasn't there a show he was in where he owned a bookstore? I think that was in Martha's Vineyard, though. Whatever show
probably.
That
probably. How long did that last? He's had like 50 or 60 TV shows, I think.
He has. And I would guess
over the years.
If anyone was in the old W, if anyone was in the old white man cabal, it was Larry, Daryl, and Daryl, don't you think?
Yeah.
Those guys are definitely in there. So have you, on your vacation, have you been able to partake of, or the last time we talked, since the last time we talked to you, Mike, have you been able to partake of anything, any movies or any kind of entertainment? You said you just finished watching some stuff that I just finished watching as well.
I was actually in the middle of it, so I can't comment on it yet.
Okay.
You talk. But I did see X-Men First Class.
Okay. And what'd you think?
I really liked it a lot. I enjoyed it. I mean, I can really only compare it to Thor recently, but I enjoyed it way more than I enjoyed Thor. And maybe it's because I've always sort of had a penchant for the X-Men franchise. I think it's always been handled pretty well, except for that third movie. But this is definitely, I'd say, the second best X-Men movie behind X2. So
yeah, I promoted it as my number one.
Yeah, I mean, I just loved it. I thought it was really cool. I thought it was funny. You know, I thought the special effects were really neat. The, you know, things kind of, at times I was like, okay, like they're really, it felt kind of moving too fast at times. And it also felt like they were really trying to tie it into the rest of the, you know, like here's how all this stuff started type of the prequel blues that, you know, a lot of movies come under. But it was, I thought it was all around a pretty great movie. So
now, Dan, you and I talked about this. Have you seen it yet?
I have not.
Okay. Like, you know, Dan and I were talking. I said I really liked it as well, though I did think it the pace, like, weirdly led up to me and slowed the movie down, like, during the montage training, you know?
That's true. It felt like the whole movie was a montage until they got to a montage.
Yeah, so it was rocketing with this really great pace, and we had Magneto, Nazi Hunter extraordinaire, and there was some really exciting stuff happening at first, and things just kind of slowed down, and even though it was a great, you know, a huge, big special effects laden extravaganza at the end, never quite to me seemed to recapture just that awesome momentum from the beginning. It still turned out to be my favorite one on balance. So that was one. And my other criticism I just thought was it really laid on the, you know, social allegory. It seemed to lay it on a little too thick, you know.
It was. I know what the
franchise does that, but yeah. I thought, you know, Vaughn was talented enough that he had some subtle stuff in there that worked more effective than just having, like, Magneto read some lines and Mystique say some things, you know?
Right. It's always that thing where I feel like directors never feel like they lose the confidence in themselves to that the audience is smart enough to get what they're saying, so they put in some extra things just for, like, the dumb ones to get.
Yeah, that's right.
You know? It's like, oh, if you didn't get what we're talking about, this is social justice. Oh, okay. So but, you know, I always liked that aspect of the X-Men, too. I agree with you, though, that the pace was kind of weird. There's something else I was going to say, but it has escaped me.
Hopefully this gives Michael Fassbender some more roles, because that guy's great.
He is awesome.
Oh, you know, one thing, yeah, that's what I was going to say. It seems like this movie, in all superhero movies, especially at least origin ones, they're always so reluctant about the costumes, and it's always like,
right, want to embrace it, right?
It's like Hollywood can't realistically get anybody to actually want to put on a costume, or like, because there really is no reason why superheroes wear costumes when it's all done. So it's like, so it's always an afterthought. So like, this was like, oh, they were gonna go save the day anyways, but they felt obligated to put on the costumes because Beast gave them to them. And they were all like, oh, we gotta wear these things.
That's right.
That's always the case.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Superhero movie is always like, ah, somebody took their time to make these. I guess we got to put them on, guys. Like, Fantastic Four is like that. The X-Men movies are like that. Punisher kind of gets away with not doing it, but like, all these movies that involve stupid costumes are always, they're always just reluctantly go ahead with them. So if I were making a superhero movie, it would not wear costumes.
No costumes, all right. And they would be called by their surnames instead of like their code names, maybe. You know?
Yeah, because that was the other thing. Like, the code names seem forced, too. Because it's all
these super- get over here and stop that glacier.
Yeah, it's all these goofy comic book conventions that we can't rationalize doing realistically. So
we're
going to
call you, Beast. I've always wanted to be called Mystique. Really?
Yeah. Really? What's wrong with Hank?
That's right. Hank's a good one, yeah? Or Dr. McCoy.
Yeah. You got a doctorate. You better, why erase that, all that years of studying?
That's right. Beast. Be the doc.
Not even Dr. Beast.
Nice. All right, Dan, how about you? Since we last spoke, what have you been up to?
I have been neck deep in Superman movies. The Blu-ray, the big Blu-ray box set. Speaking of superheroes ashamed of their outfits.
Yeah.
That's one thing for Superman. He totally embraces it.
Yes,
he doesn't really care if people point and laugh.
That's right. If they can't handle his Kryptonian junk, that's their problem.
Right, exactly. He's going to wear that blue suit and red cape no matter what.
Now, even though we're a little out of order, I want to focus on this because whenever we talk Superman, I'm just morbidly drawn to Superman 4.
Yes.
Or a Nuclear Man.
Yes.
Have you watched, what does Superman 4 look like on Blu-ray?
It looks good. Picture is good. It only has a DTS HD master audio mix in stereo. Everything else has 5.1 surround, but.
So we don't get Mark Pillows grunting in complete surround?
No. And I have to say, I watched it last night, and I'll say the same thing for Superman 3. I was entirely entertained. I mean, I was sitting on the couch laughing out loud.
Yeah.
One of the parts that I, in Superman 4, that I love so much that I had kind of forgotten about because it's been a while since I've seen it is where Nuclear Man... I believe beating up Superman on the moon.
Of course.
And it might be after he hammers him into the surface of the moon.
That was pretty good.
With his fist. And then he comes back to Earth and picks up the Statue of Liberty and tries to drop it on a bunch of pedestrians for no reason.
That's right.
Other than
being a dick move.
A jerk. Yeah. Yeah. I was laughing so hard at that. And
I have to say, even though it's a better movie than Superman 4 and 3, Superman Returns is like, I would rather watch 3 and 4 than Superman Returns, I think, you know?
Because they are ridiculous.
Ridiculous, and at least I'm entertained by them, you know?
Right, and I hadn't watched Superman 3 in a while either, and watching that, I realized that when he turns into the evil Superman.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of the like kryptonite that only half works or
kryptonite with tar.
Yeah. but because Richard Pryor is able to program a computer to create kryptonite because that's the kind of thing you can do with a computer. You know how to program it.
That's right.
Computers could do that in the 70s and 80s, but they can't anymore. It's weird.
It was like the Star Wars. Like, it was a technological degradation from the prequel trilogy to the original trilogy. So that's the problem.
But one of the things I realized is the evil Superman is he's not really evil. He's just a douchebag.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. He's not
even better.
I mean, if he was evil, he would just be taking guys – taking regular passersby and flying up in the air and just dropping them.
I mean, he is like a complete and utter douchebag. He sleeps with Robert Vaughn's girlfriend, which is unbelievable. he straightens out the Leaning Tower.
That's right.
That's right. He's like Spider-Man 3.
Yeah. Raimi just ripped off the Superman trilogy and making his trilogy.
Now, okay, Superman 4.
Gives powers in the second one, just like, Superman did.
Now, Superman 4 is when Superman releases his never-before-seen blue brick rebuilding vision, right?
Yes. Yeah, I mentioned that in the review, that somehow in, you know, 40, at that point, almost 50 years of DC Comics continuity, they had forgotten to mention that he has, you know, wall repair vision.
I think I saw his ad on a placemat in a diner.
That's right.
Yeah.
Spackle vision. No. I mean, that is Superman 3 and 4, just the gifts that keep on giving. I mean, we could probably just talk about that. Yeah. I mean, how about Superman bringing Muriel Hemingway into outer space?
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And she seems to be okay with it. In fact, the gravitational pull still affects her some way, you know?
Right.
I think Nuclear Man drops him. It's Nuclear Man drops her, and she falls to back to Earth.
Back to Earth. And they're, like, way far away from Earth when that happens. The other thing that cracked me up that I'd completely forgotten about in Superman 4 is there is a point at which Lois Lane asks Superman completely seriously, how are the missile confiscations going?
Yes, that is one of our, I love that. I mean, it's like,
is anybody giving you a hard time? Like, you know,
because he essentially becomes a fascist, right?
Yeah. And I also forgot how much of a jerk that little kid is who writes the letter. Kid,
as far as like annoying, douchey little kids in movies, he is one of the worst.
Yeah.
That kid is
I'll worse. Tell you who I'm going to write. I'm going to write Superman. He can do something about it. He's, you know, he's very forceful about it.
He is.
And, yeah. Very much of a douche. Yeah. Oh, man, it's just so great. I was surprised, actually, at how much I enjoyed pretty much every movie in the whole, you know, series.
On different levels?
Yeah, on completely different levels. I mean, yeah, you have to...
Are you a Superman Returns fan?
Not really.
Yeah, I have a hard time with that. I mean, I liked it okay, I think, but now, you know, when I look back on it, a lot of it didn't work. How about you, Mike? Are you a Superman Returns guy?
No. Yeah. I mean, I'm not really a Superman guy in general.
Okay.
I've seen the first movie and then Superman Returns, but like,
you
I've never
seen 3 or 4.
No, actually,
you owe it to yourself.
I kind of. It sounds like I should. I mean,
okay, at least like 4. If you got to choose between the two. I mean, they're both great in their own ridiculous ways. But, I mean, the cover of Superman 3 is Superman carrying Richard Pryor in his hands.
Yes,
so that tells you all you need.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Richard Pryor is the female lead in
those. Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess I do owe it to myself. Even if I'm not a fan of the comics, I should watch those two for comedic value.
The thing about Superman Returns is, well, number one, I wouldn't really make a sequel to Superman 2, which is what it is.
Exactly.
And then the other thing is, look, if you're going to go ahead and make that movie, you can't cast 20-year-olds as Superman and Lois. They need to be, like, borderline middle age. You know, you need somebody, like, in their mid to late 30s to be playing those roles if he's disappeared for 5 years and come back. He can't be 25. You know, it just didn't – that casting didn't work. And I thought Brandon Routh was decent enough.
I thought he was the least of that movie's – he was the least of that movie's problems.
Yeah.
I thought Kate Bosworth was a
disaster.
He
was just the wrong guy for that particular story. It didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
I mean, they are making that new one.
Yeah, with Zack Snyder and Christopher Nolan overseeing. So we'll see. We shall see. Well, if Superman 4 ever hits Netflix instant streaming, that might be one of those little feature-long commentaries we'll do.
Yeah.
Yes.
It might be out there. There are some Superman movies out there. I don't know if 4 is one of them, but.
No, 4 isn't. I'm like 2 and the first one are.
Oh, okay. Bummer.
So Superman 4, I'm looking at it says genre, action thrillers, comic books, and superheroes. This movie is feel good. That's
Superman 4? Well, it made me feel good last night. I was laughing hysterically.
Oh, man.
Even though I wasn't necessarily supposed to. And Superman 4 also, I have to say, boasts the most irritating performance by John Cryer.
Oh yeah, terrible.
In his career, which is saying something because he's had a lot of irritating performances over the years.
Absolutely, yeah, lots to do. So maybe that'll, Mike. Maybe that'll hit in streaming sometime, and that'll just be have to be something we'll have to watch together. Because
I'm ready and willing.
Nice. All right. Well, for me, I mentioned a little bit of what you were in the middle of, Mike, but we just finished watching the BBC made-for-TV movies Sherlock, the three movies that comprise sort of series one, I guess, technically, but it's that it's the modern Sherlock, and I really like it. So I know you just started watching some of it.
I'm about half hour into the first film, and it is. It's so great.
It's great.
Really well done.
Well acted. It feels like Sherlock Holmes for sure. Yeah. It doesn't like. It's not like someone decided to make it a sexy, hip, edgy one. You know, and yeah, you know, like they're metrosexuals like or something. No, it feels like Sherlock Holmes, John Watson. You know, in modern times, but it's funny. It's great.
It feels more like Sherlock Holmes than the Robert Downey Jr.
I agree with that. Even though I like the Robert Downey Jr. one.
Same here.
Yeah.
I agree with you. So have you seen this, Dan? Have you seen those?
I haven't, but I'm putting them in my queue
Put them in your queue right now. I mean, they're 90 minutes long. All three of them are great. I know they're doing a series two pretty soon. I'm late on this train. I knew it came out last year, but.
I'm super late, but it's, you know, I think it would appeal to anybody who's a fan of Psych or Monk. You know, those sorts of things. Even if you're not, if you don't normally like the normal stuffy Sherlock Holmes stories, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Right.
So far, it feels a lot like, only cooler, obviously, but you know,
it's got Martin Freeman. Martin Freeman is a wisecracking John Watson. Fantastic.
Yes. Yes.
All right. So yeah, definitely. I think you'll like that. Everyone who's listening should check those out. And Dan, I think you will definitely enjoy that. So let's move on. You already kind of told us what you've been working on this week. Dan, Mike, did you take any work with you this week?
Before I left, I finished a review that has not been posted yet. So be on the lookout for a David Byrne concert film called Ride, Rise, Roar. I don't know. It's one of those, some combination of those three. But it's a concert documentary or movie from his last tour that I actually saw in Pittsburgh when he was here. And so I reviewed the Blu-ray of that. It's pretty good. If you like Talking Heads and you like David Byrne's solo work, it's not as good as Stop Making Sense, which is the Jonathan Demme. Yeah. But nothing is, you know.
No, that's like the gold standard.
But this one is cool because, it's interesting. It's cool because, he still sounds really great, and he has dancers that choreographed modern dance behind him for every song, which is really cool. It's not cool because every song is broken up by interviews. So it's sort of not really a concert that flows. It's like here's a whole bunch of songs and then interviews in between. But still, the music is solid. So
very nice.
All right, Dan. Anything? Are you just all Superman now? Have you been able to?
No. Well, actually, I've been. Well, I'm assuming that at some point the Battle Los Angeles review will post. It's probably going to be release day now, I guess.
Okay.
I had submitted it a while ago, but it's in queue and ready to go, so look for that. The other weird experience I've had is, along with Superman, and I've just been kind of sneaking in episodes when I can, was this season one of a sci-fi show called Haven. I don't know if you've seen that.
That sounds familiar.
It's based on a Stephen King, like, pulp crime novel that he wrote called The Colorado Kid, but which I've never read. But the weird experience I had with it is that it stars Emily Rose as a FBI agent who goes to this little town and where strange things happen and people seem to have sort of paranormal abilities and stuff. But I had the weirdest experience because I'm watching this and I'm thinking, man, this Emily Rose looks or seems familiar to me, but I don't think I've ever seen her before, which was a weird thing. And then I realized that she does the voice of Elena Fisher in the Uncharted video game. So it was like her voice that I was recognizing.
Yes. I've had those.
Face. It was a very bizarre experience. Yeah. but, you know, it seems like an okay show. I've only watched like a couple episodes, but, you know.
Well, I'll tell you what, the opposite of okay is just go with it. And that, a little surprise DVD that our beloved editor-in-chief sent me, the Adam Sandler, Jennifer Aniston comedy that was in the theater for about 9 seconds.
Yeah.
And it's if you saw the trailer, you know, I guarantee you know exactly what happens in this movie. and nothing that takes place would ever happen in the real world. Like, nothing that happens in this movie would ever happen in the real world. Starting with the simple fact that Adam Sandler chooses Jennifer Aniston over Brooklyn Decker.
I don't know who Brooklyn Decker is.
That's all he has.
Me either.
Super, SI supermodel. Google image search right now if you'd like. And compare that to 55-year-old Jennifer Aniston.
Wait a second.
So this is an interactive part of our show. Yeah, image Google search Brooklyn Decker, and that'll show you all you need. So, and it just goes downhill from there. And basically, the plot is he starts dating this girl. She finds this wedding ring that he uses to pick up chicks. Instead of telling the truth, he decides to just build this web of lies where his assistant, played by Jennifer Aniston, is his wife that he's going to get divorced from. And for some reason, they end up in Hawaii on vacation with the kids, with like bratty kids. And true or false, he and his assistant eventually fall in love.
True.
Yes, correct. So there you go. So you know more than the screenwriters do. So
Brooklyn Decker looks mean.
I think that's a picture right after she watched the movie.
Okay. All these photos of her look very angry.
Well, it's a mean-sounding name, that's for sure.
That's true.
It's true. All Brooklyn isn't friendly, and neither is decking somebody.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be like Newark groin punch or something.
Yeah. Compton throat kick. It's not working.
Oh, man. Okay, so let us take a look at what is coming out on DVD and Blu-ray on June 14th. So we're going to go to our upcoming DVD release section at DVDverdict.com. Click the upcoming release tab, and you'll see the cover art gallery for June 14th, 2011. And the first thing I see there, Dan, is Battle Los Angeles.
Yes.
I know you reviewed the DVD. I am dying to see what the Blu-ray looks like, so I'll probably just buy that and maybe do a pro bono review, even though we all do pro bono reviews, but still. I'm tempted to see what that looks like in the high definition.
Well, the DVD looks good.
So all right, good.
Imagine the Blu-ray will look spectacular.
And was that Fox? Did Fox do Battle Los Angeles?
I don't remember. Mm.
Who did that?
I think so.
Wait, you mean that's not a real documentary?
That's a Sony one, yeah. It is a real documentary, though. That's true. PBS produced it. So, I don't know. What else do we have? What do you guys see? A lot of Sherlock Holmes stuff.
Okay.
Magnum P.I. in there.
Magnum P.I., nice.
Ooh, yeah. Foo Fighters documentary. Some Harry Potter stuff.
Yep. Getting ready.
Something called Kill the Irishman, which I don't know what that is, but...
That
looks sassy.
Looks like Christopher Walken and a sweet mustache in the back.
Thank God Johnny Mnemonic's on Blu-ray.
Johnny Mnemonic. And yet no sudden death, right?
Yeah, what? What?
It is. No, I frequently check Amazon just for a hint, but no. Yet. Underneath Johnny Mnemonic is Kingdom of War, which looks like a massive, I think it's a Thai historical action movie. So that is en route to my house, so we will see. But it's in two parts. So that means it's a whole afternoon worth of viewing. So we'll see what happens.
And there's Haven that I'm reviewing.
That's right.
That comes out.
Legend of the Fist, where also known as Kato from the Green Hornet, apparently.
Yeah. There's two packagings for this one. What is the difference? Is it like a sequel? I guess so. Or maybe not. I don't know.
I think they're...
It looks They're like both the same, yeah, it says.
Ultra double dip.
Hmm. Yeah. So if you really love the movie, you have to buy it twice.
Yeah.
So you can have all available covers.
Oh, man, there's a whole animal series coming out called Ultimate Wildlife. They've got animal adaptation, animal builders, animal communities.
Yes, animal feeding. Animal defense starring the meerkats. Wow, that's a lot of animal action. Yeah. Nature's Cycles, right next to the Ushi D-Guard collection, seems a little ironic. I don't know.
Yes. Yeah. When They Were Young, featuring a whole bunch of basketball players who I can remember playing, so it makes me feel really bad.
That's when you were...
referring to them as when they were young.
When they were young, you know, parentheses, now that you're old. You know, yeah. Ooh, let's see. How about Triple Hit? What do you think of that movie?
Sounds awesome.
She will save the world from its future.
Oh, that's a large shotgun.
Wow, three parallel universes collide. 3 of them.
Well, wow.
Looks like an action version of Nurse Ratched.
As her evil fascist self tries to kill her to invade the other universes with an army, the multiverse begins to unravel. What do you think of that? That's a description from the product. What do you think of that? How many as her evil fascist self tries to kill her?
I don't think I'm a big enough nerd to watch that movie.
Rebecca must use her sharp intellect and mastery of quantum physics to save the multiverse. Where exactly does the shotgun come in? I want to know.
That's the name of her shotgun. Quantum physics.
Physics, yes.
Right. Why do they keep talking about the multiverse as though we know exactly what they're talking about?
Come on, guys. It's the multiverse.
Hey, Point Break on Blu-ray again. Is that a re-release? Because yeah. I do have it on Blu-ray already.
Maybe they forgot that they released it.
Usually that's what happens.
Here's an entire DVD about how to fold a flag.
Yeah.
This can't be. This has to be about something else, right?
It has to be, right?
Does it come out on Blu-ray too?
Morgan Spurlock presents. So I'm guessing there's.
It is more than just the act of folding a flag. I apologize.
Which I probably would rather watch than a Morgan Spurlock thing. So. Dinosaur. A lot of dinosaurs. Man, we can't get enough of dinosaurs, can we?
Can't.
Dinosaurs, perfect predators. We just love dinosaurs.
Oh man, what are these giant robot? What's this giant robot action pack?
Where? Is that what it's called?
Crash and Burn and Robot Wars.
Oh, that is.
That looks fantastic.
Crash and Burn, Robot Wars. I'm looking.
Both, it's.
Oh, I see it. Yeah. Was it? I want to say that was on the product list a while back. There might be a review of that, perhaps. I believe there is. You might be able to read a review of that on DVD Verdict.
I need to check. This might have been for the like a week that I was on bait this week or something that I skipped. But you know, I'm a big fan of the movie Robot Jocks.
Yes. Are you gonna? How about Real Steel coming out?
I'm really excited for that movie.
Like, you love robots fighting each other, don't you?
I do, and I love it when it's taken extremely seriously like that. To me, that. Like, that movie is so serious-looking that they forget the fact that it's preposterous. And so there's a great trailer for it before X-Men, and I leaned over to my brother, and I was like, this is it. This is the movie that will take up my October.
Nice. All right, well, lots of crazy stuff here, so feel free to purchase any of the DVDs or Blu-rays here and support DVD Verdict through your purchase. But, gentlemen, inadvertently sleazy-sounding DVD release of the week. So, Mike, what do you see?
Let's see here. I will go with... hold on. I will say... I don't know. Little Rascals.
That's good. That works.
That is a good one.
It's the best I can find.
All right, Dan?
I'm going to go with American Loggers.
Oh, good. Soul in the Hole.
Oh.
Right next to The Ultimate Guide to Learning Exotic Dancing, Stripped to It Step by Step. See that?
Yeah.
Yes.
That doesn't look extremely sexy, but... It's got those red shoes.
Silhouette, yeah.
Slutty shoes. All right, so now we're going to transition into the final phase of the Friday Filibuster, and we've just got random ambush topics we're going to throw at each other. So, Dan, you got anything? What do you got?
I do. Related to our previous discussion of X-Men and Superman, mine is spandex fashion faux pas, the worst superhero costumes.
Okay.
You know, of all time.
Oh, good.
I'm going to jump right in here and take the obvious one, which is going to be nipples.
Nice.
Yes.
Nipples on a rubber suit, yes. Wherever they may be, is not worth it. So Joel Schumacher, take note.
Yeah, that's good. So you're talking about like the specific Batman and Robin costumes?
Yes, yeah. Batman and Robin.
Yeah, and Alicia Silverstone, by the way. I don't know how she squeezed her body into that costume, but it was... A miracle of modern physics.
Yeah, and somehow, because sexism was involved, her suit was nippleless.
That's true.
I've always been deeply offended by that.
That's contrarian a holery right there.
Right. If we're gonna do nipples, then we gotta go all out nipples. Period.
Let's see. If he had made a fifth, that would have been the tagline. Right. Diamond 5, all out nipples.
All out nipples. Exactly.
Oh, very good. Let's see. Well, I mean, I'm tempted to say Nuclear Man's costume because it's terrible.
It is terrible.
And it makes zero sense how he ended up with it. Like, they put a piece of fabric in, like, the genetic compound and fight it into the sun. And he comes back as this Santa Monica bohunk in this. I'm
going to go with it. Yeah. Somehow Lex Luthor gives this explanation like, well, you know, whatever, the DNA will figure it out.
Yeah.
Figure out how to make a suit out of that.
It's just from top to bottom, like, not even the costume, the whole look of Nuclear Man is terrible. I mean, the haircut is terrible. Long fingernails. I'm pretty sure he has eyeliner. The spandex, the gold.
The fact that he talks with Gene Hackman's voice.
Gene Hackman's voice. I mean, he's got nothing works for this guy.
No.
His weakness is. I mean, it's a testament to how idiotic Superman is in that movie, where he can't defeat a guy who completely shuts down if the sun isn't directly on him at all times.
Right.
See, this is what you're missing.
Get some umbrellas. Get some parasols in there.
Mike, somehow, I have no idea what you're missing, my friend.
Superman traps him in an elevator and takes him to the moon and somehow doesn't think to just put him on the dark side of the moon.
He can't get around, or drive him into the core of the moon, you know?
Right.
Or fly to... I mean, it's established you can fly to Krypton, right? I mean,
Hey guys, hindsight is 20/20.
That's true.
Okay? Well, right. Hindsight is if in the moment, Superman, he can't think of these things.
You're right. He can't. He can't. Plus, he just got powdered into the moon like fist, you know, fist overhead, like a
nail.
Old Runner cartoon. Nice. All right, Dan, what's yours?
I'm going really obscure, and this is something I thought of after we had started the show, but it's a movie that I saw when I was pretty young. I guess I was about 10, 11 maybe. 1981, called Condor Man.
Oh, great movie. I remember watching that in elementary school. They threw it on a projector. They got all the kids together in assembly and threw it on the projector. I don't think I've seen it since then, but I remember laughing hard at that movie.
Yeah. Yeah, his outfit is terrible. It's got yellow boots and a kind of feather pattern on it, with a really goofy headpiece that mimics a condor's head, I guess. And then wings that are kind of like a hang glider.
Yes.
But it's
did have a pretty kick-ass car, I believe. Like, there's one scene I remember where like his car flattened down into like a ramp, and he drove under a truck or something and up.
I had remembered this, but Condor Man was played by Michael Crawford, who'd go on to, you know, be in Phantom of the Opera.
There you go.
This looks pretty awesome. I mean, I'm looking at it on Amazon right now. It looks pretty cool.
Yeah. Oh, is it purchasable there?
The VHS is purchasable.
Of course.
You can actually get it on Amazon Instant Video for $2.
Not bad. Nice. I wonder, is it available on that? I see a DVD. For only $84.
Yeah. The VHS is $3.
$84. That's even more than the Gymkhana book.
That's $73. Although it looks like there's two editions of Condor Man. I guess there's another one that's only like $25. So, but this $84 rarity, that seems like the way to go. There's a third edition of these.
Hold out for the Criterion, guys.
There's like four or five of these out here. Boy. So Condor Man completist has his work cut out for him.
Yeah, there are three results that come up at the top of my Amazon thing when you search for Condor Man.
Yes.
The movie, a pair of white cotton gloves, and some Nike Air Flight Condor high tops.
That's fantastic.
So, get all three.
All right. Boy, this podcast has been going far too long without a shout out to Condor Man.
Yeah.
all right, so I'll go next here, gentlemen. I'm going to serve up some softballs for us just because of the three people we have on this podcast. But take your preferred diehard knockoff movie and put yourself in the villain's shoes and what you would do differently if you were him.
Let's see. Who are you throwing it to?
Anyway, either of you guys, feel free, jump in whenever you want.
Well, if I'm Powers Booth,
yes,
sudden
yes.
death, I'm not gonna escape in the helicopter. Number one, number
you're opting
two,
to go out the back door of the maintenance.
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
There's no reason to ever take a helicopter out of Pittsburgh like that. You're not gonna get out.
Yeah,
right. And there's really no reason also to at the last minute grab Van Damme's daughter.
Absolutely not.
She's just going to weigh you down. Just get out, you know?
I mean, what was the plan working for him? What did he envision that plan actually? Like, okay, he's in his helicopter. He takes off. Does he think he's going to get far?
You know, it's Powers Booth. Who knows?
Yeah. Right. I mean, he had those missile guys on the skyscraper, the U.S. Steel building nearby.
That's right.
So I guess they would have watched his back, but still, there's enough other ways out of there. They're taking the very obvious and trackable way of a helicopter.
I mean, you essentially just empty the whole arena in mass hysteria. You tell me you can't slip out
right
through the loading exit?
He had a chance to when he was in disguise.
That's right, yes.
But he grabbed Van Damme's daughter.
That's right. Good point.
Which is, you know, that's how he identifies Powers Booth, is because he's the guy trying to kidnap his daughter.
Yeah.
You know, if he had just left her alone, then...
Again, what's the point of that, though? Does he just want to, like, drop her out of the helicopter, you know, despite McCord?
Yeah.
What does that get you? I mean, you've seen this guy. You've seen what he can do. He can defeat mascots. He can zip line down into your hideout. And he can play goalie for a Stanley Cup winning team.
And he just throws it all away at the end because everything has been breaking in his favor before that, pretty much. You know, it's game 7 of the finals. The vice president is there with only like 2 Secret Service guys instead of his normal, you know, group of about 50. So you don't have that many guys to work through in order to get to the vice president. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then he just blows it by spitefully kidnapping Van Damme's daughter.
It's hubris, right?
Yeah.
Nice.
I'm going to go with the bad guy, whose name escapes me, but the bad guy in Air Force One.
Oh, yeah, played by, played by, oh, come on. Gary Oldman.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah, so I'm going to go with Gary Oldman's character, who wastes just far too much time in that movie negotiating and thinking that, you know, that Harrison Ford is going to somehow give in, you know. When I always feel like, just why doesn't anybody ever try just impersonating the president's voice? Or you know, like...
That's a good point.
That's all that needed to happen there. Or, you know, like, I guess he gives the president far too much time, you know, hanging around down in the bottom of the ship or bottom of the plane. And then, he decides to fight him himself, you know, and throw him out the cargo bay when he has like ample opportunity to shoot him. That's really the problem with that movie is nobody shoots anybody. Like from the bad guy's perspective, they don't shoot anybody fast enough, except like meaningless people. They have no problem shooting them. And I understand that they're trying to use it as leverage, but like his plan to just release this general in this prison is, I don't know.
And the general, if you recall, is in no hurry to get out of there, right?
No, he just strolls out.
He strolls out until it's
too late. If I were that general, I would have been booking it as soon as they let him out. Get me out of here before they change their mind. And then that general gets shot because he tries to run after they start closing the gates. If he wouldn't have ran, he would have lived.
That's
maybe
right.
He would have been freed another day by another terrorist. So that's go ahead.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, you could say that whole not shooting guys quick enough. That's
a major
kind of
villain.
Tragic flaw of there.
Yeah.
A common problem.
Common problem. Well, for me, I'm going to go with General Francis X. Hummel from The Rock. and pretty much everything he does. Everything. So what, again, so why he goes through all this trouble of stealing this VX poison gas, which is unbelievable and terrible and horrible, you know, taking over Alcatraz, setting up the missile batteries. And we learned that he was never, ever going to go through with this stuff anyway, right? But the whole purpose was what? He wanted to seek money or reparations or get the story out of guys who did top secret black bag operations, right?
Mm-hmm.
The whole purpose. So why not just go to the Washington Post or something, you know? Why not write an explosive tell-all with Bob Woodward? Do something. You know, I mean, they try to write it off when he's like at his wife's tombstone. He's like, you know, I've tried everything. They won't listen to me. And now I'll try this. And it just seems like there's a huge gap between, you know, just trying to talk to some Pentagon bureaucrat. I mean, aren't there some steps in between that? You know, banging your head against a Pentagon bureaucrat or filing paperwork and then threatening San Francisco with nightmarish lethal toxic gas and hiring a bunch of mercenaries that you know that are going to probably screw you over at the end. So everything right. he does is wrong. Everything.
Yeah, it seems like there would be something, you know, a little more sane on that continuum.
That's right.
Between the two.
Absolutely. You know.
So the two fatal flaws are basically, you know, not shooting people yeah. quickly and mm-hmm. creating plans that have way, way too many moving parts.
Absolutely. I mean, start a blog, you know, try that. Yeah. Try that first. Try that out for start. You know, blogger.com. Start a Google blog and just talk about the dark, you know, the black ops. So, all right. Mike, why don't you finish it off?
Okay. So just going back to the whole X-Men discussion, you know, X-Men obviously since the beginning has pretty much dealt with, you know, civil rights and social justice within, for minorities and things like that. That's the allegory there. So give me, you know, either a superhero that you would like to tackle some other sort of socio-political issue or make up one for the issue that you would like to tackle with a comic book hero.
Man, I'm not going to go with Nuclear Man twice, am I? No.
It does open itself up to that.
It does, but yeah. I'm not, yeah. Well.
He did tackle that issue, let's face it. Superman.
Well, I mean, it doesn't get any more blunt and in your face and moronic than Captain Planet, does it?
I don't think so.
No.
I mean, unfortunately, he's got the dorky green hair and stuff, so I don't know.
No, you don't have to. I'm just saying which one you would like. You could.
Yeah. Yeah, I might have to because okay. that show sucked so much. I don't remember. I think I pushed it out of my brain. Let's see. How about Meta Scarecrow? Yeah, Meta Scarecrow. So he if you think of altering or reforming Medicare, Medicare Scrow hits you with his fear toxin. And you begin seeing these nightmarish visions of old women being pushed out of wheelchairs and off of cliffs. And your poll numbers dropping precipitously. And accusations that grandma's going to start eating cat food. That's his power. You know, maybe that's his power. Medicare Scrow. Meta Scarecrow. Yeah, he'll zap you. And his power is to starve old people, I think. You know, maybe that's what it is.
And his, I guess his arch nemesis would be John Q, that character from the Denzel Washington movie.
Oh, that's right. Well, they probably work together, actually. Don't you think? They might actually be on the same page.
That's true. Well, he just hated HMOs, if I remember.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
The movie was them sitting around for an hour complaining about HMOs.
Yeah, so there's a comic book series that will sell in spades.
Okay. I think I would like to see Spider-Man advocate for the just the social safety net in general, you know.
Okay.
Just
webbing.
Everything from student loans. Obviously, he could use some student loans to, like you say, Medicare and stuff. Aunt May is, you know, I mean, she's going to lose her house. and that's a shame. To just, you know, generally trying to live above the poverty line.
Well, I can see
maybe that's what it is. Here. It's Spider-Man fighting for a living wage. That's what I want to see.
I can see some crossovers though with Aunt May's Medicare. You know, can't you see Spider-Man and Meta-Scarecrow?
Meta-Scarecrow.
Yeah. Fighting Meta-Scarecrow. Yeah.
That's right. Meta-Scarecrow wants to take away her
traveling for a living wage. That's what I want to see.
That's good.
You know, so that he can make, you know, $15-$20 an hour delivering pizzas between being Spider-Man.
Nice.
And he doesn't have to live off of the cookies that the Russian immigrant girl next door makes for him.
Well, that's good because he could occasionally team up with my superhero issue, which would be, I think the Punisher would be stepping in and enforcing lockboxes for Social Security reform. This would be what he would. The Punisher needs to, he needs to put a clamp down on spending any of the extra Social Security money on other pet projects.
Gotcha.
Just form lockboxes with his ample artillery. So that would feed well into the poverty line and the safety web of Spider-Man and the entitlement programs of Meta-Scarecrow. So.
Boy, I mean, this could be like Crisis on Infinite, you know, Crisis on Infinite.
This is Crisis on, as you say, this is Crisis on Finite Budgets.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I could definitely see at least one of these guys being called to Capitol Hill to testify at some point, don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
they would all be called individually,
and then Meta Scarecrow just blasts them all with their fear tactic. fantastic! Wow, this podcast really dipped into public policy, didn't it?
That's why people turn to the Friday filibuster.
That's right.
It's like solving America's problems.
Man, well, I got to start. Actually, Mike, why don't you start start designing Meta-Scarecrow right now.
Okay. Yeah, I'll work on it right away.
Yeah, I'll think of a story. Dan, you can be the inker. How about that?
Yes. Yeah.
Because that's what we need, comic books for sure. So, all right, well, before we totally get waylaid and start talking about debts and deficits, we'll end now. So thank you for tuning into this edition of the Friday Filibuster. Thank you to Mike, and I hope I'm predicting Smuggler Notch is just going to explode tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yes, it's going to be crazy, and temple guards are going to be everywhere.
Beware the temple guards.
So we'll see if I can escape.
Man, I really
remember to check the boiler.
That's right. I will check behind the boiler. I've got my pendant of life ready.
I tell you, there's something in there about this, like about there's something there about the story of a small retreat in Vermont. That was a grand prize awarded to kids on an 80s television show, and now they're coming to collect, you know?
Yeah. It's sort of Gymkhana, like, is there a crazy town there, too?
That's true. It is very,
there you go.
Very much like Gymkhana.
So maybe one of the kids is grown up, finally decides to cash in his voucher, and a lot has changed since you first won.
Right. Well, that's what I assume tomorrow on opening day is going to be like, where they are going to announce this tournament, this race, through the woods of Vermont. And I'm gonna be given a jumpsuit, and I'm just gonna go.
Here's what I'm thinking. Maybe the hook is that Legends of the Hidden Temple is actually the secret organization that funneled children into white slavery up there in Vermont.
I thought you were going like the Last Starfighter route.
Oh no,
the white slavery route, which is
Yeah. So then you show up as a winner who just recently found his voucher when he was cleaning out the attic, you know, and then you start putting the pieces together. You know, why so many kids disappeared? It's like Taken. Then it becomes like Taken. Maybe that's a plot to Taken too.
I'm just going to find a pile of Ratch Tech.
Yes. Yeah. British Knights just flying around there.
K Knights everywhere.
Taken 2, Olmec's Revenge. All right, well, there you go. On that pleasant note, we'll let everyone go. Have a great weekend. Again, Dan, since you're a guest, I'm going to let you close it out.
Thanks. 10 points easy.